Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
All right, everybody. I am super pumped. I have as my special guest here today, Tyler Jabe from Priority Landscape and Maintenance out of Gary, Indiana. Tyler's the founder and owner of the company, and I am really excited to have you here, Tyler. How are you doing today?
Very good. A beautiful 70-degree day in Gary, Indiana in the middle of our snow season.
Yeah. Well, I'm here in Grand Rapids, and I know that you have a location here, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I just want to start by having you tell us a little bit about your story. Like, where did you come from? Are you born and raised in the Gary, Indiana? In Gary, Indiana? Why Gary, Indiana? Because, you know, when you say Gary, Indiana, like, my mind goes somewhere else. So, like, just tell us, you know, a little bit about your background and where you came from, and how did you get in the snow business? That's the ultimate question we want to get to.
Well, so, I guess we'll start out at the beginning. I'll try to keep it somewhat quick. I kind of got started in the snow business because I was really, I come from a super blue collar background. My dad installs doors and windows. He was a truck driver before that. My uncles are truck drivers. We're just very construction oriented. Like, now my dad owns his own business, but that didn't happen until I was like 15, and he just has two employees. So my dad always told me to own my own business, and he did give me the caveat that it doesn't mean that you're going to make more money, but at least you're working on your terms kind of thing. So I always had that in the back of my head, and my mom told me from a young age that I was a leader, and I had no idea what that meant. But it sounded really cool. But basically, I grew up on an old farm, but we didn't farm. So it was an old dairy farm. And our driveway was 1,200 feet long, and it was stone. And when we got big snows where my mom's 89 Bonneville couldn't make it down the driveway, my dad would snowblow this entire driveway with a single-stage snowblower. And we had like 7 acres of grass to mow with a 48-inch rider tractor that I started mowing when I was seven or eight. My dad had to cut the seat switch because I wasn't heavy enough to, you know, do the seat sensor and reach the pedals.
That's a lot of mowing. So,
yeah, and it was like an old farm. So basically my entire childhood memories can be summed up with my dad saying, like, we got to get this work done and then we can go play. And so I was really only good at working really hard. And, you know, I'm listening to my dad tell me to own my own business, but I don't know what the I wanted to do or anything like that. And there was a buddy of mine, we had a snow day in high school. I was like 16, I think. And he worked for a landscaper that did snow, and they needed help on a big homeowner association with a ton of driveways. And me being like the negotiator that I am, I negotiated a per driveway cost versus per hourly.
Okay.
Now, the big caveat was I didn't have my own snowblower. My dad had one. Mm-hmm. And I had a little GMC Sonoma four-cylinder pickup truck. And I also had a broken arm. So my left arm was in a cast.
Nice.
But I went to work and just worked, because that's all I knew how to do is we work really hard. We set our sights on job completion and we just do it. And I ended up breaking the cast at like the wrist or the hand grip.
Right.
And I pulled all the cotton out of it and I slid my cast off and I wrapped it really super tight. And I did that for 2 days straight. It was a big snowstorm. So I was almost getting stuck and also snowballing with broken arm. But then once I got the paycheck, I'm like, hey, this is pretty slick. And so I ended up working as a subcontractor kind of after school for this guy running shovel routes. And in typical me fashion, I'm like, I could do this. Like, this is, you just got to get a couple accounts. You know, this is no problem.
Right.
And ended up picking up a couple of accounts because I would go to my grandparents' subdivision after after working his stuff and just start knocking on doors. And people would ask me, you know, do you mow grass? And but it just kind of snowballed from there. Met some people and networked a little bit just through kind of racing dirt bikes, them guys that own some local businesses. And they said, hey, you should, you know, plow snow in my places too, which are like kind of like a Jiffy Lube around here. And all of a sudden I was a business owner. And with only a couple trucks, it was not bad. Not bad. And so we worked really hard. And I was running on my parents' single car garage. And I started tearing up my parents' driveway really fast. Guys were showing up. I was dispatching. But we were still out in the country. And so my parents were like not exactly thrilled with me. So I ended up moving a little bit south.
So are you're out of high school at this point?
I'm out of high school at this point. I did 1 year of community college. I went for entrepreneurship and I was showing up late to class because I was plowing snow. And I'm like, listen, I'm willing to make the
mistakes. You're making money. You're making more than your professors are making.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm tired of talking about this. I want to go do it. So I did it. Ignorance is bliss. Ended up buying a piece of property, built a big building on it, got married when I was 23, put a little house in the front, and things were going pretty good. But in the middle of a blizzard, it was terribly difficult to convince people who lived in my neighboring, you know, where people lived, you know, our workforce, drive, you know, a half hour south of their house, grab a truck from the shop, and then drive back right to where they lived. So that kind of drove the desire to kind of move to where my people work out of. So, you know, that surrounding communities, we don't actually do much work in Gary, surprising. But yeah, that's how I found a big industrial building. It worked out really well. It was pretty much set up for us. And now we're within the biking, Uber, and short driving distance. So it definitely helped with our recruiting, retainage of people, because Gary in itself is an interesting place because we have $1 million lake homes and we have vacant homes. We have big industrial and we have really crappy commercial. So we have to travel to neighboring cities, but they're very, very close. It's actually kind of comical how we can go from boarded up houses in Gary to multi-million dollar houses in Crown Point, 15 minutes south.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, some people might not know where Gary is. You know, it's right at the base of Lake Michigan, and you know, you're probably what, half an hour, 45 minutes from Chicago. You can go the other way and you're in Michigan, like, and there's, you're really in a good spot. I mean, there's so much, no matter what direction you drive except north, you're going to be hitting, you know, commercial buildings, you're going to be hitting a lot of high-end residential areas in every direction.
Yeah, it's very interesting because we can be downtown in 40 minutes, downtown Chicago. We don't plow any snow in downtown Chicago. I'm not a big fan of traffic or people for that matter. That's why we don't do any residential work anymore. But yeah, there's so much work right around us. So Northwest Indiana, we're, you know, 6 or 8 miles from the Illinois border, right off the highway. One of the busiest highways in the whole country is 80-94 right there.
Well, before we dive more into the business, just a couple things you mentioned on your personal side real quick. You said you got married when you were 23. And these days, that sounds young, but I don't know. I was 22 when I got married, and it just felt right. So I respect that. And you have children as well. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah. So high school sweetheart, ended up marrying, held off as long as I could. So 23 sounds really young, but we've been together since I was 16. So, and then we have two boys, Wyatt and Jet, that are 2 and 5.
Nice.
And I deserve every gray hair on my head.
That's fantastic.
It's a good time.
As you know, I have three grandsons, no granddaughters, and they're 5, 3, and 1. So yeah, I totally understand.
It's a circus.
It totally is. And then you mentioned dirt bikes. How does that fit into all this? When would you ever have time for that?
Well, these days, not a lot of time at all. And as goofy as it sounds, I really don't even want my boys to get into it. So,
when did you start doing it?
I started when I was 10. So as far as racing wise, it is kind of late. But since I pretty much started racing as soon as my dad was done redoing the farm. And me, my brother, and my dad, we all raced at the same time. I grew up super close with my family because we were at the track every weekend. So I've kind of been all over the country.
So this is professional racing.
I did it at a professional level for a very short time. So I did arena cross. So that's racing in like hockey and basketball arenas.
Okay.
Against people who do it for a living, and did it at like a local A class, is the fastest class, for a number of years. But I recognize how much talent and how much money it takes to be able to go do those kind of racing, and I've been very, very hurt. And I started making money, working hard. And I'm like, hey, we're still going to ride, but I don't need to do this racing thing.
Was the broken arm a result of racing?
Yeah. I actually broke it in the Van Andel Arena right up by you.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Ouch. Okay. All right. I can see how that doesn't fit anymore. But that's cool, though. I mean, just the competitive nature of it, but also the mechanical side of that, knowing how to run equipment. And that's cool. That's great experience.
I learned how to run equipment building dirt bike tracks. Yeah. Learned how to drive my first skid steer when I was 10. Mm-hmm. And, I'm like, wow, you can really plow a lot of snow with this, if I can borrow the neighbors or whatnot. And then it kind of sparked the interest in, hey, we can get a lot done fast with these skid steers.
Mm-hmm. So right from the beginning, was snow an area of interest, like you thought it was fun, and or was snow something you dreaded and resisted? And because I'm always interested, I love snow. So I just want to know if people love snow or if they really don't like snow and they just kind of put up with it. I need to know if we're going to continue, I need to know the answer of that.
All right. It's a fair question. There are days that I absolutely love it, and there are days that I absolutely hate it.
Okay.
When I first started, I absolutely loved it because it was me and my neighbor. I had two F-250 trucks with some straight bait plows, and it was me and him, and we were doing commercial as subcontractors for the guy that I started shoveling for. And if we plowed for 10 hours, we talked on the phone for 9. It was so much fun. Like, we didn't care. We'll run all night. No big deal. And just a couple kids who, like, we met each other because we worked for the farmer together cutting and rowing pumpkins. So, like, the work was fine. Like, we're sitting in heated trucks. Well, this is awesome, And I absolutely loved it. And I didn't love it for a long time because I didn't understand organizational structure. I didn't understand systems. Back then, if you asked me what our systems were, I'd tell you, we shovel the truck, we plow and then we salt.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the next one.
You're a cowboy. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And just tried to work through everything. That was my mantra. I only knew how to work hard. So we are just going to work harder. And so when I was plowing snow and then dispatching, we got to 10 or 15 trucks and I was dispatching while plowing snow, I didn't understand account management. And so I just ran myself ragged, which I think is a very typical thing, right? Like, when in doubt, we just work harder. Mm-hmm. And it served me well. But at what cost? And it probably wasn't until maybe 8 or 10 years ago that I really started learning about systems and processes and all that. And I really had to work on my leadership. I think most of us type A people, like the go-to emotion when things don't go right is anger. And I'm sure that I ran off plenty of good people just because I, you know, that's all I do. I'm just, I'm working this hard. How come you guys can't do it? And I had to really work on my leadership. But once I started doing that, it was crazy. I started attracting better people. And now we have an incredible account management team, an incredible sales team. Like, I don't have to always be a part of things. Like, we got a little bit of snow Friday night. I didn't know that we were even going to get snow until my account management team and my ops team was like, yeah, we're preparing for a snow tonight. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And
it's probably not a great feeling, but also a great feeling.
Oh no, it's only a wonderful feeling. Like, finally, because as owners, sometimes we feel like we have to be experts in everything. Like, we're the best. We can do it. And the more awesome people that come along, the more I realize, like, this is a ship and I've got to steer this.
Yeah. Especially when you have multiple locations. Because you can't be everywhere. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so it's, you know, convicting because now I have to lead totally differently. I have to ask questions versus just telling people the answer.
So like, what size revenue were you? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just new habits, right? And just kind of always analyzing, you know, is what we're doing effective.
What size revenue roughly were you when you started to realize, hey, I need to think about organizational structure and leadership teams and systems? And was it kind of around the $1 million mark, or was it beyond?
It was
that?
Right at about $1 million in snow revenue.
Got it. Okay.
And that was interesting because I had to let people do, I had to like empower people. And I'm like, there's got to be like a way to set parameters or boundaries. And then, you know, start reading books and listening to, you know, you and Neil and all different kinds of.
So that was my next question. Like, are there aside from Snow Fighters, and thank you for supporting Snow Fighters and being part of our community, are there other systems that you've been able to adopt, like selling systems or EOS, or are there any other kind of principles that you would recommend that our listeners take a look at?
It's a wonderful question. I don't know if there's not a one size fits all. And that was probably one of my biggest frustrations in understanding and embracing that, because I would ask people that were significantly larger than me and go, what's my next right step? It depends on the people that you have and what their skills are. What are their goals? What are their capabilities? You know, like, that's really hard. I kept it. Especially these days, I keep the podcast that I listen to a pretty minimum. It's so easy to get paralysis by analysis, and there's so many opinions out there. And I think most of them have merit. But for me, I had to go, okay, how is this applicable to me? What's my next right step? If one of my goals is to basically be out of the day-to-day operation craziness, what is my next right step? Who is the person to take this over? Are they capable? You know, and those are really convicting questions.
Who are your go-to people for advice when you're asking those questions? That what is my next step? Is it your father? Is it a mentor? Is it a consultant, a coach, or is it kind of? Do you take the approach of, I have this group of advisors and I want to hear from all of them before I make a big decision?
I think it depends on the situation. What I like is, now that I've been able to assemble this team, I can ask some of my people, like, what am I missing? What is confusing? And we have enough resources to where we can find that right answer. Like, I've ran plenty of things right past you in the past. I've ran things past Neil. I like this one guy. His name's Ed Mylett podcast. He just seems to be the type of leader worth following. And that is a convicting question that I have to ask myself, is, am I somebody worth following? You know, do I have urgency when you know, somebody brings up a legit claim. And, you know, I think that one guy, Ed Milette, I think he's somebody where he's firm, but very empathetic, but also goes, hey, you're capable. I think a lot of times our people just need to hear that, like, hey, you can do this. Yeah, it's going to be really hard. You know, like, yeah, things aren't, you know, I guarantee things are going to go wrong at some point, right? How many, we've all sent plenty of trucks out to go plow snow. And, you know, half hour later, you get two phone calls of blown out tires or something, you know, plow doesn't work. Okay, well, how do we react to those? Mm-hmm. And so it's building that team and almost intentionally finding people that are so good at the tasks that they're hired to do is it makes me go, you know, like we can work through this problem together, but you're more capable of completing this account management task than I am.
So, right, because you have expertise in that area. That's why I hired you.
Exactly, right? Yeah. I have found that, like, I'm not good at anything except, like, working really hard and, like, cast a pretty clear vision of where we're going. Mm-hmm. Like, it's intentional. It's just going into the situations going, this is going to be really hard. Like, we're not going to underestimate or overestimate this. We just know, hey, we think this is the right thing to do. This is going to be mm-hmm. really hard. We're going to do it anyways.
Well, I'm really impressed at, you know, someone in who, you know, for being someone in their mid-30s, to have that realization, because I'm dealing with so many people who are my age or older who have just been way too involved in their companies, having to make every decision, and they haven't built that team. They haven't come to that realization that, you know what, I need to let my people do what I hired them to do. There's a reason they're on my team. I need to let go. And as a owner, leader of a business, you know, you're really, your best spot is to stay above all the daily operations and really provide leadership, try to get out ahead of the company and, you know, more season ahead, year ahead, 3 years ahead, 5 years ahead. External relationships are super important. Taking time to get input from, like you said, from me and Neil and podcasts and other people on your around you and even your own team. But I love the fact that you're talking about this because I think you're wise before your years, you know, or whatever the saying is. But so I love this approach. And there's a humility there too. There's an awareness that it's not all about you.
So no, can you talk a little bit about sustainable if it is?
Well, right. But I think this leads right into kind of your culture. And I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about the kind of culture you're seeking to reinforce in your business. Like, what do you want to be known for as a business leader? What do you want your company to be known for?
I mean, to sum it up, as goofy as it sounds, our culture kind of starts off with probably my favorite motto. I don't think I came up with this, but I sure use it a lot, is like, I'm too stupid to quit. Like, every snowplow guy can, like, relate to this. Hey, there's a huge blizzard coming in. Like, what are we going to do? Like, this is really hard. But are we going to go home or curl up in a ball? Oh, like, we have to get it done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are times where, hey, sometimes you just have to just work through it, mm-hmm. right? Just work harder. And it just mm-hmm. is what it is. But that's kind of where our culture kind of starts, is like, hey, I'm not stopping. Like, things are not always awesome. Mm-hmm. And especially, this is now the second winter in a row where we haven't got anywhere close to our seasonal average. Like, last year we had 110 inches in Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm. Average is 75, by the way, in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, and we're 37 here.
Right.
And we're not even close. But we're going to control the controllables. Well, I have found out through my whole doing everything wrong twice leadership journey is I can only control my thoughts, my words, and my actions. I can influence, I can, or at least attempt to, you know, lead through it. But how are we taking advantage of the opportunities given to us?
right? The opportunity might be, hey, we can fix things. Hey, you know, maybe our equipment repair budget is down. Hey, maybe it's, hey, let's prepare for this warm season type work, because that's a big part of what we do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be excited about growth in our maintenance and construction departments. Like, there's nothing we can do about the weather. We can only take advantage of the opportunities given to us. And are we going to be good stewards with our time and our money, or are we not? We're just going to complain. Like, I'm all in because I refuse to be the guy at the end of the bar at the VFW going, ah, if only this or if only that. Like, you just can't play that game. That's a miserable place to live.
No regrets.
No, yeah, no, you can't. I mean, we're going to do it wrong.
Please don't water. I love these sayings. I love those things, the I'm too stupid to quit type things. Don't ever trade those out for teamwork, blah, blah, blah. Don't water that down, because that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah, it's unique.
We value candor a lot.
Yeah.
At my company. Like, if something sucks, just tell me, hey, yeah, like, this is terrible. Okay, well, what's terrible about
give
it?
Me the
How
truth.
Do we make this better?
Well, let's shift gears. I want our listeners to hear about your company. How are you structured? What kind of services do you offer? Like summer services? I think you said you're all commercial on snow. Love to hear what your summer work looks like. And you mentioned multiple offices. So how many offices? How are you set up? And even like, how big is your company?
But we are full service commercial and industrial. So we do a lot of big construction stuff where, you know, we're working on a 500,000 square foot building install, you know, with 286 trees or something crazy number that's going to be installed in stages throughout this year. We do gas station installs, so irrigation comes with it. Mm-hmm. That's probably my least favorite service, but we mow a lot of grass. And we make sure to keep our maintenance divisions and our enhancement divisions bigger, significantly bigger than our construction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that kind of on purpose. One is from a cash flow standpoint, very difficult mm-hmm. if you're construction heavy.
Right.
I'm tired of, and with construction typically comes a lot of conflict at times. Mm-hmm. And I'm not that old, but I'm tired of arguing with people, mm-hmm. although that doesn't always, you know, go that way as well. But basically just trying to build a sustainable growth type company that, you know, God forbid if something ever happens to me, you know, my wife has a tangible asset that's worth something of mm-hmm. value.
Sure.
I think postmortem probably more than most 34-year-olds, mm-hmm. but like I care well, about
you're smart.
I'm in it for right. long term, you know.
Mm-hmm. Super
I
smart.
I don't live the safest lifestyle between still riding dirt bikes and all that, but also, you know, chasing bears every year up in Canada. You know, we've had some close encounters.
That's so where insurance comes in.
Yeah, exactly. So
So the 7 mil, how much of that snow and how much of that's landscape, construction, maintenance?
On an average winter, our snow will be a 30% of our okay. gross revenue. It mm-hmm. will probably be less than that this year for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But we try to keep snow at like 30% of our revenue.
Okay. And then you're operating out of how many locations?
So we have two like branches, one here mm-hmm. in Gary. And then the other is just to the east side of Grand Rapids and Lowell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And actually on my to-do list tomorrow is to try to find a satellite yard that's on the northwest side of Chicago.
Nice.
So that's something that we're going to have to do. Mm-hmm. When you deal with these big property management companies, they want you to kind of go all over the place. And mm-hmm. we spend a lot of money on drive time. So if we can reduce those drive time costs, we're certainly going to, because that's our number one loss leader.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine. You're going to the north side of Chicago again today. Oh, what's that drive? Is that a two-hour drive?
Oh, it could turn into three on a Friday afternoon.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'll bet. So was the decision to go right into Gary, was that strictly for recruiting? Like, go to where employees are?
It was a lot of that, but it was also what was affordable at the time.
Sure, so, yeah. I would imagine it's very affordable.
Yes, but the prices are definitely going up because it seems to be, I'll call it the last frontier of the local area.
Okay.
So, I mean, a lot of the shovel ready type industrial lots that are just to the east or south of us, those are going for $120,000 an acre. And that's with nothing on it. So we're on 5 acres here. And I think for the money, we got a pretty good deal, but we're also close to where we wanted to be. I mean, we're an unincorporated, so we don't have gangsters walking down the side of the road or whatnot. It's very blue collar right where I am, but I mean, Gary's Gary. It is what it is.
Right. We've all seen pictures.
Oh yeah.
I've driven through Gary. What about subcontracting for snow? How much work do you do internally versus subcon? What's your strategy on that? And are you seeking to like go big into subcontracting, or do you want to keep that a smaller part?
Oh, it's a great question. So we don't sub for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We run a few subs. And, you know, I was afraid for so long, and this is probably a big joke between Neil and me, because that was our last topic of conversation. But I was so hesitant to do it because I needed control. That was like the whole last 10 years of my business. You know, I need control. I need control. And then you realize you ain't in control of anything. I want to move more towards subcontractors. The cost of equipment is crazy. It's super hard on trucks and whatnot. And I think, and there's a lot of really good small businesses out here that do concrete and asphalt and all those things with the machines are sitting all year long. So, you know, I have this little mantra of being here in Gary is how do we be a light in a dark world? Mm-hmm. So like I've got the nicest building for a couple of miles. And how do we become people that people want to work with? And because I think there's a lot of good people out there. So if we can create opportunities for others to make money with what they already have, so call it bonus money or icing on the cake, and it's good for them and it's good for the customer and it's good for me, like this only makes sense to kind of go all in on it. Mm-hmm. The price of skid steers are big, you know, big and expensive. And hey, we have 20 of them. So during the summer and even right now, they're not doing a gosh darn thing. So, you know, from a scalability standpoint, it definitely becomes a common conversation is how do we get more qualified and good people? And how do we teach them to do well? How do I teach them to go, hey, these are the systems that we used, right? Like, I'm not going to hoard all this information. There's tons of work out there. How do we help people be a little bit better?
Is there a recruiting or retention tactic or strategy that you think works really well at your company?
Like anything, the word of mouth is really good. I think good people know good people and vice versa. But I think like any good relationship, it's just a lot of communication and it has to be proactively on our end of, you know, hey, we're here to help. It's not just a one-way street. Yeah, we have high expectations, but here's what we're going to provide. Like, here's some things that we've learned in business. You know, how do you help other guys, you know, scale their business? But I mean, it's really not that complicated. It's just, hey, here's the open lines of communication. Just a lot of proactive, even though it's not much snow going on, we're still talking to subs, you know, on an every other week basis of, hey, how you doing? You know, is there anything we can do to help you? Here's what we're learning here. Here's what we're doing. And here's the controllables that we're focusing on. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel on it.
What about on the customer side? Like, what do you tell a customer? If a customer asks you point blank, like, you know, everyone cuts the grass, you know, everyone uses the same kind of mowers, everyone plows snow with the same kind of equipment. Like, what makes you special? Why should I hire you? What's your answer?
Well, there's really only two differentiators. Uniforms are uniforms. Like you said, mowers are mowers, trucks are trucks. It doesn't matter what color they are. All the blades spin the same. That's all the same thing. I think people, the customers are genuinely caring about relationships more. I'm not totally sold on that people are more loyal these days.
because we've seen a lot of property managers be stripped of their decision-making skills, and it goes to a regional level now who really only manages by budgets. But people can be more advocates for us, so they can give us, you know, the inside track on, hey, here's where your competitors are. The relationships, our only differentiators are price and customer service. I'm not aware of much else. So,
I think I just want to reinforce that for our listeners, because in my experience, you know, every time I hear someone say, you know, loyalty's gone, relationships don't matter anymore, my blood boils, because I just totally disagree wholeheartedly. I think business at its core is all about relationships, about trust. And I think my clients, over the course of almost 40 years now in this business, the reason they hired us and retained us year after year after year wasn't price. It was because we had gained their trust, and we answered our phones, and we said what we're going to do the first time. And if we made a mistake, we made it right. And we had their back. We knew how to protect them. We knew how to make them look good. And we were their partner. We were truly their partner. We were on their side. And they saw us as part, and eventually you develop deep relationships and you really become part of the family almost. So nobody's going to convince me till the day I drop dead that that has changed in business. I don't think that's ever going to change in business. I think that was true 5,000 years ago, and I think it's going to be true 5,000 years from now.
Sure. There is a basketball player that spoke at a snow conference I went to named Mark Eaton. And the premise of his entire speech was he was there to make his teammates look good. And that is part of our sales presentation, is like, we understand, Mr. Property Manager, that our job is to make you look good. Right?
Was he the 7'2" guy?
Yeah. He was really good.
I heard him. I heard him speak. Yeah, he was fantastic.
I liked it. And what I liked about it, it was very simple. Mm-hmm. Like, that is my job. I don't want to be the guy in the spotlight. Like, this makes me slightly uncomfortable. You know, you see the guys on the front of the magazines with their arms crossed. That's not me. Like, there's no such thing as self-made. It takes a huge team to be wildly successful. So that's part of our sales presentation. We're here to make you look good. And that's my job, is how do I make my account managers look good and operations look good? Like, I'm just the guy in the background making sure everybody has the tools and information to do their job well.
Kind of a servant leadership model.
Yeah. Yeah, it's better that way. It can be exhausting to try to be the expert all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, inverted leadership and inverted pyramid. It's all good, right? I'm here to support you.
Yeah.
My job is to help you be successful.
Exactly. That was a big thing that we had. We had one decent sized snow in, I think it was early January, up north, and it snowed and snowed and snowed, and it was a wet, heavy snow. And my account manager actually stayed up at this giant apartment community for, it was like 2.5 days with the crew. And he would just bounce back and forth on between his accounts, just staying in so much touch, trying to make the property manager eventually, you know, stay informed, so he's not caught off guard if his boss calls. Like, he knows exactly what's going on. And, you know, like, my account manager, Anthony, he was, you know, too stupid to quit. You know, he fit right in with there, and he genuinely cares. And I think, like, we could say that, but I think we're pretty good at showing it. And we're going to make mistakes. Like, we are not infallible at all, but we're really good at making them right.
Where do you and your team go to get professional development, education? Like, what trade shows are you going to? What associations do you belong to? I know you've been a regular attender at Snow Fighters, but like, what else are you guys getting involved in?
So the Snow Fighter stuff for sure. I've done some stuff with SIMA. I've been on some board talks, and those are pretty comical because, you know, to some, like, hey, maybe we have it going on. But then you sit next to the guy who has 70 pieces or 150 pieces of equipment, and we're not so much of a big shooter anymore, you know. So it's good to be reminded of that, mm-hmm. that, hey, we got a long way to go. But I like the SIMA. We do belong to Illinois Landscape Contractors Association that we'll plug into every now and then. I started working with the Herring Group. Mm-hmm. They've been huge as far as really nitty gritty financial feedback. Like, that was everything. Right. If I was smart, I would have gone for, you know, business finance and actually stuck with it, because I probably could have gone twice as fast. We should be three times bigger than we are right now, but hey.
Well, people always ask me, you know, how big do I need to be to, you know, hire a CFO? My answer is, your first employee should be a CFO.
Yeah.
Like, you need to understand your finances. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, Greg and his group at Herring Group are fantastic. They do a great job. So nice plug for them. So just generally, how are you feeling about the snow industry? What do you think's going on with the industry? What are some trends that maybe you're seeing? You know, we've had these warming trends. You know, when I was your age, everyone thought the ice age was coming because it was cold. It was getting colder every year, and people were, oh, the world's going to ice over, and we're not going to be able to feed the world because all the crops are going to die. And now, you know, 50 years later, we have a little warming trend. So I don't know. Maybe I'm old enough to just see these bigger trends and go, this is just a cycle, but I don't know, maybe not. But so I'm not asking you specifically about what you think the weather is going to look like, but just in terms of the industry, I see a lot of innovation with, you know, software and technology. That seems to be a big push, but what are you seeing on your end?
Well, the big thing that I'm wrestling with is capacity. Hey, okay. I think a lot of these systems and services are super valuable. The big thing is, how do you integrate them sustainably and work them in with your, like, you know, daily operating procedures kind of thing? Like, okay, if one account manager could typically manage X amount of size portfolio, how do you do a little bit more without giving up any, you know, that customer touch? And, you know, they're still building commercial. Northwest Indiana is still booming. There's lots going on in Grand Rapids. Like, somebody has to plow the snow. Somebody has to mow the grass. So I'm pretty overall pleased with the career that I kind of fell into. Because I think it brings a lot of security. And, you know, I've seen the autonomous right mowers, and I've seen the autonomous, you know, sidewalk equipment. I think those are all fine. I'm interested. I'm kind of watching from a distance and go, okay, these are cool. How do you remove the coolness factor and just make very pragmatic decisions, right? Because some of these are very expensive. And that's my big thing, is I think the snow's always going to be there. You're always going to have to do something. How do you do it profitably and sustainably? And, you know, the accounts that you might have needed two loaders on, now do you just think about one, right? Because that cuts back on costs and overhead and all those other things. So we're really having to look at those things very pragmatically by the numbers and go, hey, is this profitable or not on an average year? Like, I personally think we're probably going to get a pretty heavy winter next year, because I think the things just go in cycles.
They do.
You know, I have some of my best friends are farmers. Well, we have wet years and dry years, and they've just kind of, that's just how it is.
I mean, statistics don't lie. You always go back to the statistical average. You always do. So you can't ignore the fact that, you know, math doesn't lie. So
I'm optimistic, cautiously, but I think that there are times where, now that we've had 2 years in a row, okay, do we need to modify our approach? Do we think we need to do a little bit more subcontractors and cut back on the amount of equipment we have? Which, you know, those are all fair questions. I think that it would be foolish to say, well, we've always done it this way, therefore we're just going to keep doing it. And, you know, everybody's balance sheet looks different. Everybody's profitability looks different, right? There's a lot of different factors that go into that. What actually matters, Are we just paying for equipment or are we making money, you know, that we can actually take home? And it's how do we grow capacity? That's my big thing right now is how do we grow capacity? How do we stay busy but not chaotic? How are you prepared for the worst snowstorms, but also a typical, you know, 2.5 or 3 inch snow? So, you know, everybody's threshold is different and risk tolerance is different. But for me, I want to continue growth. So what does that look like? Are there things that served us to a certain point that maybe they don't serve us any longer? So I'm questioning a lot of things right now.
What about for a newer person in the industry who's maybe just starting out? Maybe this is their second or third winter and they're trying to get things going. Like, what kind of advice do you have for them?
Spend the overhead on people. Be careful how much equipment you buy, but if you're going to buy something, buy the best. It's like a buy once, cry once, but you just definitely got to watch the overhead. I think the overhead is a killer of a lot of things. Your gross margins could be excellent, but if you have too much overhead, it doesn't really matter.
So know your numbers.
Know the
profit model.
Yeah.
At your volume. Yeah. Right.
And I think you try to stick with the niche. Like, what do you do differently? Like the expectations of a big apartment community could be very different from a large industrial site.
Absolutely. No, that's great advice because trying to do everything for everyone is eventually you're going to find that that doesn't work. So the sooner you can hone in on a specific area, I think the better you are. What else do you want to share before we wrap up? Is there anything we didn't touch on that you were hoping to chat about?
Well, I always get a kick out of some of these sometimes because everybody thinks it's like, wins, you know, constantly. And, you know, like I have faced so much adversity. I've done everything wrong twice. And sometimes you just got to go, okay, what is the next right step? And it's not always raindrops and, you know, gumdrops and unicorns for sure. Like things are really hard. And I think you just got to get scrappy at times. And you got to stay focused and you got to be assertive, but you also have to be willing to be wrong in 3 seconds. And, you know, whatever somebody's trying to build, somebody's already done it. And there's a lot of guys that own just absolutely giant companies that probably aren't smarter than most people, but they're resourceful. They ask questions, you know, like it's not unique. Like there's not a success fairy, but I think the persistence is everything. And you just constantly just question a whole lot of things and go, okay, what makes sense and what doesn't? And you got to definitely be open to being wrong or incorrect and got to be willing to change strategies. And you basically have to hire a team so good to where you're potentially the dumbest person in the room.
I think that's great. Fantastic. There's one last thing I want to touch on here. You said we want to be a light in a dark world. It almost has a spiritual overtone to it. Can you put a few more words to that? What does that mean to be a light in a dark world?
Well, I don't watch the news a whole lot because it can be very depressing. And we just kind of focus on what we're doing. And I think we have to know what our competitors are doing, and you have to know, you know, you got to keep your pulse. You got to keep a finger on the pulse of kind of what's going on. But, you know, are we leaving this world a better place? Are we leaving, you know, are we leaders that are worth following? Are we, you know, husbands worth being, you know, like a lot of people have made wonderful career decisions that have hurt their family life or marriage or, you know, like, and none of that really matters, right? Like, you and I were talking right before and, you know, like all my problems are a privilege. And so I think it's important to keep like that perspective because like, how do you buy something? How do you get more? It's always more, 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 more. And, you know, like you definitely don't take it with you. And money for me is just a tool for experiences.
And oh yeah, it's definitely spiritual. I mean, I figured out a long time ago, it's all a big blessing from the good Lord above. You know, I did never thought I'd make it this far, but I feel the more that I learn, the more I feel an obligation. That's a lot of the reason why I show up every day. I feel an obligation. I've been given a lot. So like much is expected of me then. Mm-hmm. And so like, I can't let my fears, you know, be projected on others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whenever I thought something was going really bad, it always ended up better than what I expected. Not in my time frame, I can assure you that. Mm-hmm. But hey, just like right now, we're not getting any snow. Okay, what does that create? An opportunity. So it's like kind of living an intentional life, mm-hmm. you know, knowing that, you know, we're going to do everything we can with the resources we can. And, you know, we're like, we're obligated to give it our best. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I love that. I love that.
I want to be able to drive home going, yeah, I did everything I could. I leave my house at 3:30 every single morning. I go to the gym at 4. I get to the shop at 5:30. It's like, all right, let's do it again. Mm-hmm. Like, I do a lot of it out of obligation. Because if it's really hard for me and I quit, well, I got two boys that will eventually figure out if I'm a fraud or not. I can't tell them, keep going. Yeah, it's okay. It's hard. Mm-hmm. They're going to figure me out.
Right.
So it's convicting.
Yeah. No, that's great. Living a life of gratitude, being grateful for what you have instead of just striving for more and more and more, because there's no end to that, right? That's you're chasing something you can't ever attain. So I think it's fantastic. And a great way to wrap up our discussion here, Tyler. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Have a good rest of winter, and we'll see you, I'm sure, at one of the Snow Fighter events coming up.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snow Fighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.